So tonight's talk is on doubt. It's interesting, when I was thinking about the hindrances, the one that's the most challenging, pretty much my nemesis, is doubt. So I thought, oh, perfect to talk about. I don't think I'm by myself experiencing doubt and how it arises. Maybe how it arises in me may be different than it arises in you, but I kind of get the feeling that we're all familiar with doubt. Sometimes I think doubt and judging ourselves are twins, and they just, wherever one goes, the other one's right there. Because if you're judging yourself, you're doubting yourself. It can be insidious and extremely painful and hard to shake at times. The Buddha said there's nothing more dreadful than the habit of doubt. Doubt separates people. It's a poison that disintegrates friendships and breaks up pleasant relations. It is a thorn that irritates and hurts. It's a sword that kills. But let's be clear, some doubt is beneficial, is useful. So I don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater, because that's not realistic anyway. I know, like, sometimes before I leave the house, I'll make sure the lights are off and the stove is off and the oven is off. And then I'll go get in my car and then I'll sit there and think, did I turn off the stove? Did I turn off the oven? So that momentary doubt or questioning actually can serve me, because that means I'll get back out the car and go look to be safe. And in that way, I think doubt serves a purpose. It helps you remember, but it also brings you right up on your edge. It is said that doubt is one of the hindrances. Doubt as one of the hindrances is the most dangerous of them, because it can cause a person to give up their practice. We can have doubt in our ability to practice, or doubt of the practice or the teachings. And it's a state of indecision, of vacillation, that doesn't allow us to fully apply ourselves. It causes us to hold back and to get lost in discursive thinking. And it can question our own ability. Can I do this? Is this the right way? How am I doing? And then when you ask yourself, how am I doing? And then you start comparing. And you're looking around, and you're looking to see what somebody else is doing. And then you're thinking, they're doing this so good. I shouldn't even bother, because I'm never going to be able to do it that good. So then, like I said, the twin shows up, and one's on one bookend, and the other one's on the other, and you're in the middle. So they're just playing ping pong with you. And you're like, oh my goodness, I don't believe this, and I'm judging myself. And it can be very, very disheartening. It doesn't matter if a hindrance is present or not, but it does matter if you're not aware of it. Tara Brock says, like investigation, healthy doubt arises from the urge to know what is true. It challenges assumptions of the status quo in service of healing and freedom. In contrast, unhealthy doubt arises from fear or aversion, and it questions one's own basic potential or worth, or the value of another. So when I was in the hospital, I was there for quite a long time, and I woke up from a coma, for lack of a better word, and I was out of it for 5 weeks, and then began the slow process of healing and recovery. So I ended up being in ICU for 5 weeks, and trauma unit for 5 weeks, and then I went to the nursing home. So when I went to the nursing home, I was still in quarantine because of the kind of cancer I had. So I was isolated, and I spent all I had was time for myself. And when anybody came in, from nurses to physicians to friends visiting, everybody had to totally gown up, because of the potential of bacteria. And so I would sit there. And sometimes the nurse would say, would you like the TV on? No. Would you like to hear some music? No. Would you like something to read? No. Doubt had me in their vise. Like, you know, I don't know if it's in a horror movie or something, but it reminds me of, I think it was in, what is it, that movie? Anyway, it was one of those venture movies, and they're in this cave or something, and then the walls start closing in, and then their arms go like this, like they're going to hold it back as if it's going to keep it from closing in. That's how it felt, that kind of doubt. And I would sit there day after day thinking, sometimes thinking about practice and wondering why I'm not doing anything. And I should be doing something. I should be practicing. I should be meditating. I should be doing mental practice. I would have this go around in my head. And so sometimes when friends would come visit me, they would remind me, your practice is right here. Ajahn Chah says that too. He says, your life, what's going on right now, I'm paraphrasing, is your practice. And I was like, okay. So that would ease it up a little bit, and then I wouldn't feel so guilty for a moment, a few days, and then doubt would be like, I'm just going to wait. Just wait, because I know there'll be some space for me to come right back. Like, she didn't even think about that. Now I'm back. So the doubt can be so insidious and pervasive. It questions one's own ability. Can I do this? Is this the right way? And then how am I doing? And they can be obstacles because they are asked at the wrong time and they become an obstacle. So they block your clarity. So recently, my mom passed in November, and she was sick. So I knew it was going to happen soon. I just didn't expect it to happen like that, because it's, you know, you never know. It's sudden, it happens, and as much as you think you're prepared, you're not. So I was planning to go on a retreat when I came back from Boston, because we had a big memorial. We had a small memorial here in my sister's home. And then we went back east because that's where most of my family is. So we had a huge memorial there. And then when I got back, I was supposed to go on retreat for a week. And I chose to cancel because I got back the day after it started. And I knew I could go. I could get permission and go. And then I thought, I don't want to see anybody. I don't want to talk to anybody. I don't want to do anything. And I was like, how am I going to practice? I don't want to sit. I don't want to be anywhere close to trying to think about anything. You know how you're worried about something, or you don't want to worry. Let's say you don't want to worry about something. And it's on your mind, and it's never going to let you go. And you want to just get out your skin so you don't have to be with it. Has anybody ever had that experience? Okay, so it's not just me. So that whole week was like that. And I'm like, okay, I got to do something, because I don't want to sit. I don't feel like metta. I was a wreck. So then I thought, oh, well, let me have somebody talk to me. So I listened to guided meditations, and they were on self-care or on the breath or on just things like that, body scans. So what I enjoyed was someone talking to me, and I didn't have to do anything. And so the doubt would still come around, but it didn't have as much weight. And I checked in with a couple of friends of mine who practice, and I said, this is about all I can do. And I was so, it was so welcoming because they reassured me that this is just what you need right now. And I thought, oh goodness, I'm brilliant. Because it was all I could do. And I recognized that a lot of what has been happening and then comes and goes now is grief. And grief shows up in the way it shows up. And that first week we would call each other. I have 7 brothers and sisters. So we would check in with each other and just say, how are you doing? And things like that. And everybody was having a rough time. And we were coping in different ways. But it was like, it's still hard. But I have a different relationship with it now. But I was really glad that I had the guided meditations because I was still able to practice. And it was almost as if I was sitting in the lap of Kuan Yin and letting her carry me because I couldn't carry myself at that time. And I was relieved. And it was really kind of nice to have the guided meditations, and I was so proud of myself that I thought, oh, this is how I can practice. And it made it okay. But going back to when I was in the nursing home, I felt like I had been in the hell realms because the doubt just was like that vise. Yeah, and it just wouldn't let go of me. And then I would have to remember, or I would remember, it's not personal, it's not permanent, and it's not perfect. And then there would be like a little bit of room. So instead of the wall coming in like this, I could feel just a little room. And then I was like, okay, this is okay. It's interesting how doubt shows up and just undermines everything, as if you didn't have any years of practice, didn't have any tools, that you forgot about how to do inquiry. It just derails you. And then you remember. It's like, oh, that's right. This is doubt. Gil Farnsdale says, doubt is not productive or useful. It drains us or disconnects us. It keeps us unwilling to apply ourselves. Sometimes, I think, I don't know if I want to say I want the doubt there, but sometimes when it's there, I don't mind it, and then I feel guilty because I'm like hanging out with doubt. And it's part of it is like, it's too hard to think of anything else. So I'm just going to be miserable and be with it, thinking, oh, if I accept it and be with it, then eventually it'll go away. But sometimes you can use doubt as a way to not deal with stuff, you know, like aversion. And that doesn't seem to help either. To have doubt about mindfulness of the value and importance of just being mindful borders on having doubt about the value of being present for life in general, because mindfulness and being present for life is the same thing. Gil says that. Sometimes when the doubt is there, I don't know if it's doubt or if it's the blues or if it's situational depression or clinical depression, but it immobilizes you to not want to do anything. It's like, I don't want to be bothered. And it's sometimes it takes all your energy just to put one foot in front of the other. Because the doubt just clings. And it's like, I'm not going anywhere. But how do we get out of this like barnacle of being choked? Sharon Salzberg says that doubt in Buddhist teaching is a very interesting quality because there are many ways in which doubt is highly prized. Remember when I was talking about We need to question, we need to wonder, we need to investigate, and we need to insist on seeing the truth for ourselves. And these things, which are all elements of doubt, are very positive. So that's what I was talking about earlier, is that doubt can serve us when it's within a context like what I just mentioned. And then there's the quality of doubt that we know is hindrance. And this is more likely called speculative doubt. It's doubt about our capacity to learn. I know when I was in graduate school and I was trying to write my dissertation, I was like, what in the world made you think you could do this? And I was like, this is hard. Why did I think I could do this? Why am I doing this? What is going to be the outcome of this? And then I was fixated on finishing because I spent so much money and time trying to get it that I was determined to do it, which I did. And then when I got the degree, I was like, that's it? That's it? All my hard work and no money, and this is it? Oh. It's sort of like you reach this peak, and then the peak is over, and you're like, okay, now what? So the doubt showed up in a different way. And then there's the doubt that's a form of cynicism, which is instead of diving deep into a process to let it speak to us, we can't understand it for ourselves. We step aside and are frozen and cynical, which is often a kind of a mask for fear. For a long time, when I was in graduate school, I had a dear friend who passed away, and she would say, you always say no before you say anything, before anything else. You don't even let me finish asking, and you say no. And I'm like, because it's no. And she's like, you gotta give it a chance. And I'm like, mm-mm, it's no. It's that simple. My experience in my life was like, if I prepare for a no, then I won't be disappointed. There's no setup. It's right there and I'm done. And she's like, well, maybe you can change it to a possibility. And I'm like, why? So you hear the cynicism. And she's like, because it could be different. But I learned a lot from her, and I learned it can be different. But no was very comforting. It didn't serve me after a while, but it was okay. But it involves indecision, uncertainty, and in some places, lack of confidence. You can't do this anyway. It causes a person to hesitate, to vacillate, and not settle into a meditation practice. It's really hard to explore doubt when you're in a meditation practice and you don't care. You're like, why bother? So I'm restless. So it's not sloth and torpor. I'm not sleepy. I don't want to do this. Why am I sitting here? How long is this sit going to be? Why don't they hurry up and finish? And it's like on and on and on. And then it's like, oh, this is doubt. And sometimes when I name it, it takes a little of the weight off. It's like, okay. So then I want to know, why am I doubting? I have all these doubts. So then there's a little bit of an inquiry or maybe unpacking. But it can take many forms. There's the questioning doubt, where it leads to inaction and giving up, like, why bother? Questioning doubt inspires action and the impulse to understand it. It can, in fact, be helpful for mindfulness practice if you're willing to investigate, because a questioning attitude encourages deeper investigation. So it's an inquiry. Oh, okay, so I'm experiencing doubt. What's causing this? What am I feeling at this time? What's in my body? How is my body showing up with all these doubts or insecurities that I'm feeling? But when it's in your practice or in the teachings, it can be harmful. harmful, but when it's about oneself, I think it's the most dangerous. Because it can immobilize you to the point where the fear or whatever that's driven you to not be able to make movement debilitates you. And then you don't want to try. So then you have apathy and hopelessness and doubt. It makes you feel pretty miserable. Sometimes when you have an expectation and then it doesn't turn out to be what you expected, that can be a disappointment, and maybe doubt can arise at that time. And sometimes thoughts can appear reasonable and convincing enough to mask the underlying doubt that's prompting them. Because doubt can be very sophisticated. The longer you practice, I believe, the more subtle the hindrances are. They're not like in your face now. They're like subtle, and they just slide up and sit next to you, and you don't even know it's there, and you're like, what is going on? And doubt's just chilling out, sitting there with you, waiting for you to figure this one out, not helping you at all. It can interfere with your meditation practice because you're doubting. You're doubting your practice, you're doubting your worthiness, you're doubting the metta, you're doubting the Buddhist teachings. It's like, whoa, what is going on here? Your practice can feel difficult. Ugh. You know, it's like you're pushing this boulder up the hill, the mountain, and there's no movement because the damn boulder is too heavy to move. And that's the doubt. And it's like, what is going on here? And then maybe you can ask yourself, well, can I take care of myself if I relax a little bit, if I'm a little more accepting of this? Maybe there's a little more room for me, a little more wiggle room, if I'm not so hard on myself, if I don't beat myself up about whatever it is that I'm doubting. Sometimes it's really hard to recognize it when we're caught in it. And the challenge then is to have enough distance and space to see it for what it is. And sensing any accompanying physical tension or pressure may help pull us out of the orbit of the doubting thoughts. Once the hindering doubt is recognized, there are different ways to work with it. We can have a careful contemplation resolving the doubt. We can explore it through the practice or the teachings, or look at other teachings or listen to teachers talk about how doubt works in practice, and then learn some other skills that can be of assistance. And then there are some other tools as well. One of them is investigating the hindrances. And you're probably familiar with the RAIN formula. When a hindrance is present, it helps to investigate it. R, recognize it. Oh, this is doubt. Accept it. Investigate it. Be curious. What is it like? Physically, how does it feel in the body? Is it pleasant? Unpleasant? Does it change? I think if it's pleasant, then it's seductive. And then you really don't want to get out of it because you like how it feels, forgetting the whole reason why you explore it in the first place. Emotionally, you're charged around it, maybe. Energetically, there's maybe feelings of rushing or sinking or just feeling immobilized. Can't do anything, can't go anywhere, don't feel anything, don't know anything. You're like, I'm done. This has got me. Or what beliefs or stories do we tell ourselves that reinforce that whole cycle? So it's pretty miserable. Motivationally, is there anything to act upon, or are you clinging on something? So this doubt just is having a good time. I told you it stays. It doesn't go away that quickly, even though we want it to. So there's recognize, accept, investigate, and not be attached.
Right.
How are you not going to be attached or non-identification when you're sitting there being miserable and you're looking at all of this and somehow you did something to yourself to get into this place? This is just a passing process that comes and goes. It's not who we are. I think we forget that and get caught up with, this is never going to end. Because that's how it feels in the moment. Sometimes recognizing a hindrance is enough for it to fall away. But other times it's helpful to use remedies or tools to counterbalance the hindrance. I think it's really hard to just have a remedy and think it's going to work right away. You've got to put an effort into it. Just like the doubt has made an effort to be there, you have to put an effort into finding ways to let go of it. I think it's really hard. Let's see. So Tara Brach says, the greatest gift of a spiritual path is coming to trust that you can find a way to true refuge. And you realize that you can start right where you are in the midst of your life and find peace in any circumstance. Sometimes when the doubt is there, you can't find the peace. It's just not there. It's not available. You forget you can call on it. You forget loving kindness. You forget compassion. You just stop. It's just like, ugh. Or more than that. Even as the moments when the ground shakes terribly beneath you, when there's a loss that will alter your life forever, you can still trust that you will find your way home. And this is possible because you've touched the timeless love and awareness that is intrinsic to who you are. And that is true if you remember that. But sometimes in the midst of that place of such stuckness, you forget. So one of the most important things about working with doubt is not only to recognize it when it arises, and you try to put it aside while you meditate, but sometimes it doesn't work. So having clear instructions and talking with other people or talking to your buddy and finding out how they've coped with it gives you information. But one of the ways to the antidote for doubt, as Philip Moffat says, is faith. Faith from the view of direct of experience, of spiritual truth, is not the same as belief. As Sharon Salzberg says, faith is a verb, an active willingness to suspend judgment and to see for yourself what is true. You can overcome doubt by having faith in your teacher, the teachings themselves, the practice, or whatever it is that inspires you to action. And I remember when I first started reteaching after I had been sick and all of that stuff, people would say, well, how did you cope? How did you manage? And I would think the Dharma, but I would think faith. And I didn't know how to put it into language, but I knew that faith would get me through this. Dr. King says, faith is taking the first steps even when you don't see the whole staircase. And I remember when I was in physical therapy, they had these stairs. And on one side of the stairs, the steps were not as wide, high, wide, high. And then on the other side, they were higher. So then I would practice going up and down the stairs. Three up, three down, back and forth. Taking that first step, even when I didn't know, see the whole staircase. Plus it was only three steps, so I could see that. But then when I got back home, I had a lot of stairs. David White has this poem about faith. He says, I want to write about faith, about the way the moon rises over cold snow, night after night. Faithful even as it fades from fullness, slowly becoming that last curving and impossible silver of light before the final darkness. But I have no faith myself. I refuse it even the smallest entry. Let this then, my small poem, like a new moon, slender and barely open, be the first prayer that opens me to faith. And on the drive over here, the sun was about to set, and it had the yellows with the grays, and the sky was kind of bluish, but sort of off-whitish. And it just, I was on 37, so it was a lot of traffic. I didn't have to drive fast. Not that I would. And I just got to be with that experience. And I would look out the window and then back to the roadside, pay attention. And that's faith. The faith that the sun rises and the sun sets. So this faith is like so powerful. And when faith shows up, doubt is like, oh no, I got to go, because I'm not going to even try to be in contention with you. And then it's like, oh yeah, faith, I can get through this. Faith is your reminder. That's it. Let go of the battle. Breathe quietly and let it be. Let your body relax and your heart soften. Open to whatever you experience without fighting. Jack Kornfield said that. It reminds me of faith. It's like, let go of the struggle. And then doubt's like, oh man, you're not even going to fight with me? And then letting it be, that's called acceptance. That's being equanimous. And doubt's like, oh, here it comes. And then your body relaxes. And then your heart softens. And then you're open to this is what it is. And you're not fighting. And doubt is like, dang, I got to go. Because there's no fight here. There's nothing that I can hook on to. And then your faith is right there. And it's like, all right. That's right. Thank you. There is a phrase I would say, I often say before I start teaching. And I heard it I went to some church and it was in the choir. And it was a refrain. And it's called, and the refrain, well, what I remember, it's a simple statement. And it's called, I say, order my steps and guide my feet. And so then I did a search because I thought maybe there's a song or a gospel song. And there is a song called Order My Steps. And this is part of the lyrics. Order my steps in your word. Wise speech. Order my thoughts in your word. Guide my feet in your word. Wash my heart in your word. Show me how to walk in your word. Show me how to walk in your word. Direct my footsteps in your word and let no iniquity yet mastery over me. Guard my steps in the ways of your word and do not let any sin control me. Establish my footsteps in your word. So how I interpret that is that I have faith. The faith that guides me so that when I speak, may I speak from a place of wise speech. When I'm thinking about what I'm going to say, may those thoughts be one that cause no harm or as little harm as possible. when I think about wash my heart, can I hold this experience with all this doubt or suffering that I'm putting myself through? Can I hold it with some kindness, with some tenderness? Alice Walker says, healing begins where the wound was made. So this concept of order my steps and guide my feet is that I surrender. I am letting go. I accept this is what it is, and I trust and believe in whatever the outcome is. And when I was in the hospital, in the nursing home, all of it, sometimes when I was just laying there, I would just think about letting go and surrendering, and this is how it is for now. It would feel like forever, but it was like, this is how it is for now. And can I accept that? And can I surrender to that? So the faith is so powerful and so healing. And when you fall back on the faith, you really are in the arms of the Buddha and the lap of Kuan Yin, because you're sitting with the teachings that everything is impermanent, nothing's perfect, and it's not personal. So then how do I sit with that? And then there's equanimity. So being equanimous in that context, this is how it is for now. Can I be with that? It helps a lot. So when I think of order my steps and guide my feet, I think of being equanimous. I think of faith. I think of compassion. I think of surrender. And then the doubt, when it arises, it doesn't last as long. It's sort of, you know, it's you're trying to climb up something, you keep sliding down because you don't have a grasp. So that's what the doubt is like. It keeps trying to climb up on you. It doesn't have a grasp, so it slides down. So that Lena Horne says, it's not the load that breaks you down. It's the way you carry. And I think doubt can do that to us. Our minds can be so wonderful, but at the same time, they can be our very worst enemy, and we know that. And they can give us so much trouble. And sometimes I wish the mind were like a set of dentures, which we could take out and leave on our bedside table, right? And then at least we'd get a break from its firing, its tiring and tiresome escapades. Then you just have to remember to rinse them and put them back in your mouth. But it would be so great just to take them and put them aside and say, okay, I'll see you in the morning. So somewhere along the line with all of this doubt stuff, we have to stop mistrusting. We have to let go of the suspicion and the doubt, which are supposed to protect us, but sometimes they don't work and only end up hurting us even more than what they're supposed to defend us from. I think it's important to remind ourselves in the context of our practice that doubt is definitely a hindrance. It's worth the inquiry for sure, and it passes. It comes and it goes. Doubts can't resolve themselves immediately, but if we are patient, a space can be created within us in which doubts can be carefully and objectively examined, unraveled, dissolved, and healed. What we lack, especially in this culture, is the right, undistracted, and richly spacious environment of the mind, which can be created only through sustained meditation practice, and in which insights can be given the chance slowly to mature and ripen. And that is by Sogyal Rinpoche. I think it's really interesting or helpful to understand that we look at doubts in a context of healing, then we can look at or unpack it and say, what's causing this? What's the root cause of this suffering? And maybe it might have been a trauma or an early wound. And then it's like, oh, then you might have a little compassion for the doubt and say, okay, you've been here for a purpose. That's why you keep showing up and driving me crazy. But you're not working anymore. What you served, how you served me before was very helpful. And it's not helpful anymore. So maybe instead of exploring or being with doubt as a nemesis, perhaps you could befriend it. Say, okay, let's not argue. Let's not fight about this. Let's figure another way to work through this. I am willing to let this particular doubt go, and I want you to know that you have served me well, and thank you. But I don't need you anymore, so I would appreciate you don't show up. So what you're doing is you're cultivating a new habit. So where that doubt took up that space, it may no longer have be in that, you may no longer have that space for doubt to arise because it doesn't have the same charge anymore. It can't rattle your cages like it used to. So perhaps it's time to have closure with this particular aspect of doubt in your life and say thank you. So what you've just done is shifted how you've held the relationship with this doubt. It still is a hindrance because it's not serving you, but it's not the bad guy. It's a service that no longer works. So perhaps you could say, in a kind way, thank you. It's time to move on. I'm replacing you with XYZ. I'm replacing you with this metta practice that helps ease some of the early wounds. So that shifts even how you're experiencing the doubt. That doesn't mean it's effective every time. Maybe it works with the doubts that are like minor, but the heavy duty ones that are like based on trauma and woundedness, I think you might need a little support to get rid of that. I think the Dharma is really helpful, and maybe having someone to work with that helps you see those patterns so you can let go of them. Because if they're not serving you, then they're only making you feel miserable, because when they come up, they stay. Then it's like, oh, you're here again. Befriending the hindrance. Having kindness or compassion for yourself in relationship to when it arises. A different way of holding the doubt. So a friend of mine, Enrique Calizo, I think part of this might come from something that he quoted it from. But I wanted to end with this because even though he's talking about something different, I'm going to offer it in relationship to doubt, because I think it would be, it's valid. Welcome, welcome, welcome. I welcome everything that comes to me today because I choose to see it as an opportunity for practice. So here's doubt, and he welcomes doubt, and it's an opportunity for him to explore and unpack and understand it. I welcome all thoughts, feelings, emotions, persons, situations, and conditions. Because conditions are not the cause of my suffering. So I let go of my desire for control and the need to be right. I let go of my desire for control, and I'm repeating myself, and the need to be right. I let go of my desire for validation, esteem, approval, and pleasure. So he's surrendering, and he's saying, let it go, let this go, let this go. And you can put doubt in there. I let go of my desire for survival and security. That's huge for a lot of people. I let go of my desire to change any situation, condition, person, or myself. So doubt is right there, alive and well. Because I understand that when I let go a little, I get a little bit of freedom. And when I let go a lot, I get a lot of freedom. And when I let go completely, I get complete freedom. May I relax into the way it is, not the way I need it to be in this moment, so that I may be free. May we all relax into the way it is, not the way we need it to be in this moment, so that we all may be free. Thank you for your practice. We have a few minutes if you'd like to ask questions or comment. Yes? What? We're going to get the mic. Just one moment. Thank you. Oh, I do that all the time.
It helps me when it arises, which is often mm-hmm. in my world, and to realize that it's nature, mm-hmm. that it's arising because of causes and conditions that went before. Mm-hmm. And it's just, it's like, it's nature. Mm-hmm. And in realizing that, you kind of disidentify and relax.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. That's a good one to remember. You just have to remember.
I know.
And then you can relax. Thank you.
I really appreciated your words. They were so authentically from your experience. I equate doubt with despair.
Yeah.
We're talking about it and with trauma. It's important to remember if you come from trauma, like violence and sexual abuse, mm-hmm. that's going to be there. And it doesn't mean it's going to be there tomorrow. And it's okay. Because when it's not there, the present moment, in contrast, will show you how your willingness and surrender to it brought you to something greater.
How wonderful. Thank you. Thich Nhat Hanh says, all we have is this precious moment. Thank you.
Thank you.
Over here.
I recommend Doubt as a Meryl Streep movie. And I took a while to dispose of the word doubt in my vocabulary mm-hmm. by training myself that doubt is out. And curiously, the second, third, and fifth letter of doubt is O-U-T. I thought that was interesting what you said about the barnacle of being choked. Mm-hmm. And is a barnacle a crustacean, and that we're in our shell?
It's interesting. When I was thinking about this on the way over, I was like, isn't a barnacle like that green slimy stuff that mm-hmm. gets on you and it's hard to take off? No?
It's different.
Okay, I get it wrong. But that's what I... Oh, that's barnacle. Okay. So whatever I was thinking was a barnacle is what I was thinking was I was just trying to describe. But I...
Equally bad.
Yeah, she said it's equally bad. So forgive me for the wrong word for what I was describing.
Well, I think it was appropriate.
Oh, okay.
Someone has said that the word they liked out of all the words was indubitable.
Indubitable.
And when you think of doubt and being dubious, one of the ways that I always approached dubiousness was to tell myself that doobies go up in smoke.
I'm not going to touch that. Thank you very much.
The goal is untraining and
yes.
re-educating.
Yes.
And to come up with a gimmick, to
yes.
red flag a word, to finally teach myself to give up should. I think it took a couple
yeah.
of years.
Yeah.
Okay, and while you were speaking, I got doubt as an acronym would stand for doing other understandings before trusting.
That's great.
And what I got
to write that
is for or from all inner truths harvested.
Thank you. Thank you for such a sweet teaching. That's so great. Maybe one more? That was good.
I have one. When you think of, I appreciated the Martin Luther King quote, and I just think of him and all that he did and how the world kept throwing things back that could cause a lot of doubt. And so I thought if there's anybody that I could think of that inspired me in a way to deal with doubt, he would be somebody. But is there anybody else that inspires you in a way that you think handles doubt in such a way that...
Wow. I'm glad this is the last question. I think it's more than just one person. I know it's more than just one person. I love poetry. And there are a few poets, there's quite a few poets that I love, but then there are a few that stand out that I go back to over and over again. So this list is just some of them. It's not exhausted. Pablo Neruda. I always say his name wrong, Rilke, Reiki. Alice Walker, Nikki Finney. So those are four that I can think off the top of my head. But I have a bookcase that's just poetry. So, David White, of course, and John O'Donohue. Okay, let me stop. I'll keep going. But thank you. That's a great question. And I want to say thank you to all of you. Wonderful teachings. Wonderful. I learned so much. Thank you for your practice.